Están escuchando El Viaje Medianoche con el gran Guillermo. Este cinéfilo lo va a llevar fantasmal por millas y millas.
This is episode 3 of, you guessed it, The Midnight Ride. This episode has been brought to us by one of our lovely ladies in our community. And that would be Heather of ViewerDiscretionAdvised.net fame. And Heather was kind enough to bring us something a little more contemporary this time around, which is good. I didn't want to be doing all kind of 80s and 70s stuff. I figured I kind of wanted to go from 20s, 30s. Right up to this decade, and without sort of guiding anyone and just kind of crossing my fingers and having faith in the people that I asked to program, they've done that unwittingly but successfully. So this time around, we're going to go to 2012. In fact, a 2013 release here in the U.S., and it's an independent film by Aaron Moorhead and Justin Benson. It's Resolution. Now, I'll synopsize this because I haven't had really my act together to synopsize the films prior. I've covered on the show. So a man looking to save his best friend from the throes of methamphetamine addiction ties him up in an abandoned cabin and induces withdrawal. So I think that kind of gives you an idea of what you're getting into, but unlike some other synopsis we see, it doesn't really give away a whole heck of a lot. This film at first glance was one that kind of fell into a genre or a subgenre or a bit of a trend of sorts that we'd seen, which is kind of this indie mumblecore kind of horror thing that seemed to be pretty commonplace, from everything sort of like make out with violence. I don't think this feels quite as mumblecorey or navel gaze as those, but it certainly has a bit of an indie aesthetic, which I guess it has becoming more common with films like Bellflower, which again, I'm loath to kind of compare it to those films because I didn't really care for those films. And as you'll hear from me, as I talk about this film, I like this film a lot more than those films. But yeah, the aesthetic is pretty noticeable. Now, this does something that at first glance, well, my first impulse or instinct was to compare to another filmmaker who's working on the other side of the pond, and that's Ben Wheatley. It kind of takes kitchen sink or standard dramatic hooks or setups, presentations, and puts a little bit of horror in them. Wheatley did this really well in Kill List, which is, for my money, one of the best British horror films of all time. Sounds like hyperbole, but I tend to find a lot of British horror to be a little dry for my taste. But it was a wonderful film. Sightseers, I had the opportunity to see it TIFF years ago, and thankfully I did. Again, it's a morbidly kind of black film, but it's played very sort of kitchen sinky in its aesthetic. And this, again, does sort of the same thing. So it definitely, to me, my first instinct was to say, this feels like an American Ben Wheatley film. And that's high praise, for sure. And I like that they take a bit of an original premise. I mean, the cabin in the woods thing maybe isn't so much, but I think the fact that they take this hook of the methamphetamines, it's something that we haven't really seen in... not the methamphetamine, sorry, not the drug addiction, but the just that it's a relatively, if I was just to read you that presentation or that synopsis, you wouldn't necessarily think this is a horror film. You think maybe it's kind of a a chamber piece, you know, it could be almost like a play, a two-man play, and it kind of feels that way. It's not overly fantastical, so... but it does a good job throughout of kind of balancing a lot of the normal mundane, well, I guess not really mundane considering the circumstances, but relatively sane aspects and I guess to a degree mundane aspects of what the characters are trying to do, which is dry out, not dry out, but detox his friend who's kind of gone off the rails. But they sprinkle throughout the film a lot of kind of great creepy or unsettling stuff. In a way that, like, even a Simon Rumley, to kind of keep it back across the Atlantic, Rumley's films that I've seen, Living in the Dead, and I believe it's Red, White, and Blue, I want to say that's what they're both called, fantastic films. But again, they're kind of set in reality for the most part. And for the most part, this is. I mean, it kind of gets pretty wild at the back end, but it's a slow burn for sure. Like, we start off with some pretty ominous photos, and I have to say, being a horror fan, I get a little bit cynical about some of the Easter eggs that are thrown in, or the stuff that's kind of built us up as presentation, and it does a good job of working. It's effective. The stuff it shows you is effective. The film initially has a lot of characters thrown at you, but it does settle in quite well. We have our principal characters, Chris and Michael, and then we get some other characters, various criminal backgrounds and the like, but it does bring a lot of characters in, but it settles in a way that you know, it doesn't, you're never really lost, I guess, which a lot of times when you get a lot of characters thrown at you, it just feels baffling. Who's this? Why is he here? But it keeps itself grounded with who we want to see on screen. Initially seeing Vinnie Curran on screen, I was a bit concerned that he wasn't going to be someone I was going to particularly care for. He seemed to be going for a little bit of the Zach Galifianakis type role, and I mean, listen, I like Zach Galifianakis, but the bearded kind of stocky wild man thing is getting a bit out of hand in films now. My friend Jay from Michigan is a bit of a stocky bearded fellow, and I guess Vinnie Curran, who played Chris, reminded me a little bit of him, but yeah, anyway, that aside, initially I was a bit concerned with that, you know, a lot of use of the word fuck, which again, I'm no fuddy-duddy, but that can be tiresome, as we talked about in our principal show. I think last week or the week before, when Sammy had watched something, I think he'd watched the new Kiyoshi Kurosawa film, maybe, and he was pretty kind of tired of it. I think it was Kiyoshi Kurosawa's American debut. I mean, no, maybe not debut, but his second film. Anyway, he was a bit burned out by that. We don't need to kind of use fucks as a way to present what our characters are all about, or to kind of transition through dialogue, or to show sort of anger or disdain for things. Another thing this film does well is I think I talked about, what film was it? You're Nobody Till Somebody Kills You. The budget for that was $1 million. This budget was, again, $1 million, but I feel like the money's much more well spent. You're smart to not outreach the scope of your vision and to kind of be cognizant of how much money you're spending, because in this day and age, you need to have the right things in place and emphasize the right things so you can put the money you have into the film and not... shooting in New York, where it's going to be expensive anyway, permits and the like. You shoot this out in the woods, you get a few good stock actors, and you're kind of off to the races. The rest of the film will kind of work itself out if you have talented people working around you. And this film definitely does. For example, one of the things they use a few things you've seen in horror films before, but they don't particularly seem tired. Which, you know, you being horror fans, you can kind of burn out on some of the tropes of horror films, or some of the hallmarks of them, but there's a really effective record player in this, and there's a lot of media, which I guess I haven't had a chance to really toss this around in my head too much, but various methods of media being used in regards to, I don't want to spoil anything, in regards to our principal characters and what's happening with them. And yeah, it's used really effectively, from shot on video stuff to the record players. I'm trying to think of something. There's audio cassettes, DVD, I think maybe DVDs. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm not ahead of myself, but I'm imagining things or making things up as I go here. But the progressive introduction of this media into the film and what that media means as the film progresses is handled really well, and it does give you a sense of a progressive dread and unease as well, what's about to unfold. And I think it also does a really good job of cranking up at a good pace the oddity and the sort of the bizarre feeling of the characters. At times it feels like, it doesn't feel like it's really pushing for this, but it feels a bit like a David Lynch film. Like, it's just kind of odd, and it's littered with these really bizarre people, and it feels organic to the film, thankfully. It never feels like it's odd for odd's sake, which sometimes you get people really going for broke with the film. They really want to hammer home that, look how crazy these people are. They're crazy. And Benson and Moorhead never really do that. And again, Benson looks like he's, prior to making Resolution, he did a short called AM. He's, you know, probably had a lot of experience maybe in film school, or kind of just cutting his teeth with a lot of stuff maybe he was doing behind the scenes, but not a lot of stuff I can see here, unless it was sort of film school type stuff. But they show a pretty, him and Moorhead, let me see if Moorhead has a little more experience here in terms of his work. Yeah, definitely a little more experience, but a lot of shorts, which can be a good way to kind of cut your teeth for sure. Yeah, a lot more work from Moorhead, it looks like, but in any event, the two work well together and have a patient, steady hand in dispensing things. And I think that it feels almost like at times, I guess because it deals with drug addiction in kind of a rural American area, like a much calmer version, a sort of a different perspective version of Popskull, to speak of another American independent film from a few years ago that I quite like, Adam Wingard. And I think another thing that I'm pleasantly surprised with this film is, after a few minutes of kind of initial concern for some of the acting or how it was going to be, I think everyone in the film, and especially our leads, because they got to do a lot of the heavy lifting, but everyone in our film, the film, I should say, does a wonderful job, whether they have a few lines or they have a great sort of dialogue with any of the characters. Like, there's a wonderful scene with a French scientist in a trailer, probably my favorite scene in the whole film, and that's really where it gets really Lynchy and creepy, and Moorhead and Benson know how to cast faces, too. A lot of times we're able to do get sort of emotional shorthand, but fleshes things out in a way with just kind of some faces or a few things, body language and what have you. But yeah, it's pretty well acted for the genre and the budget and the lack of experience that I think most have in this. Another one, it also kind of feels like to me, and just in terms of the witness of this media almost as a third party, or a third person perspective, excuse me, not third person perspective, well, third person, but it should be first person. Does that make sense? It's late and I'm rambling a bit, but there's kind of a bit of a thing with Blair Witch 2, which I think it's panned a lot. I think it's a decent film, and it was wise to kind of step away from the faux reality or documentary footage that the first one had. It was a bit of a gamble and rubbed some people the wrong way, but I quite like it. I think it's got some effective stuff in it going on. And finally, there's a really great scene, to bring back to the media, with a very chilling scene with a CD in a truck, and things start to really, the vice really starts to tighten, the noose really starts to tighten, and you're starting to get a lot of anxiety. It's becoming palpable. So yeah, I think this is a good film. This is on Instant. Those of you that do want to check it out, definitely check it out. It's certainly a trick, or excuse me, it's a treat, not a trick. My make or break is the scene with the pot-smoking Frenchman and the trailer. It's just a great face. The guy almost looks like one of these two older twin creepy brothers that were in want to say it's called Nuit Noir. It's a film, I want to say it's Belgian maybe, from a few years ago. It's a really fantastic, really creepy film. Let me just check here as I go, because it's going to bother me otherwise. Yeah, I think it is Nuit Noir. Yeah, that's a fantastic film, 2005. Is it Belgian? Looks like it's probably Belgian with some of the names. Anyway, yeah, it is Belgian. So anyway, this guy kind of reminds me of that. And my MVT is the cast. Again, I got to go with the cast. So far in the Midnight Ride, the casts of the films I've really liked have really impressed me, which is always nice to get. You know, it's something that as horror fans, I think we can overlook and just kind of go for effects or atmosphere. But when you can get behind characters and you really like them, it goes a long way, I think, towards everything else working for you in the film. My score for the film is a 7.25 out of 10. Certainly not a world beater, but it's a refreshing film from a genre that, as much as is near and dear to my heart, has really left me fatigued a lot over the past 5 or 6 years. It's left me a little disillusioned, which is another reason I wanted to do this 21 and 31 for the month of October. So there you have it. It's a treat. It's on Instant. It's a great little American indie horror, kitchen sink horror film in the vein of a Ben Wheatley type film. And I want to thank Heather for introducing me to it, and with that, I will say adios.
All right, you've been listening to The Midnight Ride with Large William, baby. Stay tuned for another episode where we bring the pumpkin to the pumpkins and the hangman's rope to the city folk.
Ow! Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll avait en lui un Monsieur Hyde qui était son mauvais génie. Mr. Hyde ne disait rien, mais en secret n'en pensait pas moins. Je vous dis que je ne suis pas le Dr. Jekyll. Que mon nom est Hyde, Mr. Hyde. Dr. Jekyll n'a eu dans sa vie que des petites garces qui se foutaient de lui. Mr. Hyde, dans son cœur, prenait des notes pour le docteur. Il n'y a plus de Dr. Jekyll. Mr. Hyde. Docteur Jekyll un jour a compris que c'est ce Monsieur Hyde qu'on aimait en lui. Mr. Hyde, ce salaud a fait la peau du Docteur Jekyll.